Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Catch with John Fisher on Blog Talk Radio, connecting life to faith.
We're just trying to get it together, trying to help their fellow man, hoping we can make it.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of The Catch on Blog Talk Radio, and we are very fortunate tonight to have our good friend Randall Balmer back. He is, as you know, an American historian, mainly on aspects of religion in America, and especially of evangelicalism in America, which is, these days received a whole lot of criticism and interest and influence and all of that. Randall's been a tremendous voice for reason in the midst of all this, and got a couple books that try to explain why we got so into politics and the political right and all of that. He's been very fair, I think, and the main thing is he tries to stick to fact more than opinion, and that's the thing I appreciate most about his writing. And that's why we love having him on our show. So, Randall, welcome back to Blog Talk Radio and The Catch.
Hey, John, it's always a pleasure. Good to hear you.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I have to say, Randall, you threw me a curve on this next book we're going to talk about because it just kind of came from out of left field. You're talking about sports, passion. Passion play, and sports and religion in America. What an interesting topic, and kind of a surprise after most of your other conversation, but I guess maybe not as much as we think. But sports is so fraught with big money and ego and who knows. We do see religion and sports as expressed by, God. I just want to thank God for helping me beat all those other guys,
right.
Because they were praying too, it seems to me, at least some of them. So,
right.
Which makes that an interesting call, but tell us some of the background. What led you to write about this topic, and what are you basically? I know you've got a whole book for it, but what are you basically trying to say here to us?
Well, yeah. First of all, John, I want to point out that in the lead up to your question, you appropriated two sports metaphors. You're talking about a curve and out of left field. And there you are.
There you go.
And you probably didn't even realize it, but you were using
the language
of sports. And that is very much part of our common conversation these days as Americans to talk about sports. And that's part of the reason that I wrote the book. I think if I had to give sort of a central idea to the book, and it's a bit more complicated than that, but I think the central idea is that it's arguable, at least, that organized sports has become the new religion in North America. I'm talking about both the United States and Canada with hockey, of course, being very, very central to their entire identity as a people. But if you look at any index of devotion or passion, I think, in North American life, you see that sports in many ways is much more important to people in North America than religion is. And of course, I think that's regrettable, but I think that's also the case. And we have to come to terms with that.
Ah. Wow. What would that mean? And maybe what are some other connections? What are some other spiritual implications do you see in sports?
Sure. I think I'm a historian, as you said earlier in the introduction. Mm-hmm. So that what for me was really the point of entry into this conversation is to look at the development of the four major team sports in North America. And by the way, they really kind of came to their more or less present form over a period of about a century, from roughly the 1850s, maybe 1840s, until the 1940s and 1950s, the post-war period. And that's when all four of these sports really developed quite significantly. And part of the reason for the emergence of these sports was a movement that historians call muscular Christianity. And this began in Great Britain, actually, in the 19th century, when churchmen, primarily with the Church of England, the various ministers or priests with the Church of England, began noticing that women were far more faithful and devout in their churches than men, and they showed up far more often than men, which is, of course, has been the case since at least the late 17th century. And so as a way of trying to revive male interest in Christianity, they devised this movement that, as I said, historians called muscular Christianity, that sought to associate the Christian faith with masculinity. And if you're a student of the New Testament, which I know you are, you can easily see how they would do that. St. Paul talks about running the race and finishing mm-hmm. the course. He talks about putting on the full armor of God. And so these metaphors of athleticism and militarism went into this formulation of muscular Christianity. So one example of an organization coming out of that would be, of course, the Salvation Army, which is militarism, putting on the full armor of God. The best known athletic manifestation of that would be the YMCA, Young Men's Christian Association, which, of course, sought to combine Christian piety with athleticism. The whole idea was to provide a place of refuge for young men as they were moving into the cities in the late 19th century, to keep them out of trouble, keep them away from the brothels and the taverns and so forth, and keep them occupied with athletics. And these ideas of muscular Christianity came over to the United States or to North America. Beginning in 1855, the YMCA establishes a branch in Montreal, Canada, and then later that same year in Boston, Massachusetts. And that's how the YMCA took hold in North America. But all of this is muscular Christianity, and so there is this big push late in the 19th century to associate athletics with Christianity as a way of trying to lure men back to the faith and back to the churches.
Ah, interesting.
And you see this also, I'm sorry to interrupt, John, but you see this also in so-called institutional church movement in the early part of the 20th century, when a lot of churches had church league basketball tournaments, for example, or church league softball teams. A lot of the churches may have put bowling alleys in their recreational facilities, or even swimming pools, again trying to emphasize the connection between athletics and Christian faith.
Yeah. What about Fellowship of Christian? Isn't it called
another great example?
FCA?
Fellowship of Christian Athletes would be another perfect example, a beautiful example of I'm sorry?
When did they get going? I don't remember how far back. You know,
if I remember, it was in the 1950s, but don't quote me on that. I don't have that information okay. right hand. But actually, my wife and I had to drive cross country for her father's funeral. As we were driving through Kansas City, I looked up to the left, and there was the headquarters for the Fellowship of Christian Athletes.
Yeah. Well, and then, of course, you've got those, you got traveling wrestling teams that are...
Power Team for Christ, yes. And
yeah.
Like that. Yep.
Yeah, and they're evangelists, basically, and they gather a crowd based on their athletic prowess, and then they tell people about Jesus.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Athletes in Action, of course, would from
Campus
Christi for Christ would be the, right, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, all of this is muscular Christianity. And that is what really, in many ways, propels the popularity of these team sports.
Uh-huh.
And probably the best example of this is James Naismith, who is the inventor of basketball. And if you have a minute, I'll tell you quickly about his story, if that's all right.
Yes.
James Naismith was reared in rural Ontario, and he went on to actually study for the ministry, for the Presbyterian ministry at McGill University in Montreal. And then he decided to affiliate with the YMCA. He was affiliated with the Montreal chapter of the YMCA, but he decided to attend the YMCA training school in Springfield, Massachusetts, which today is known as Springfield College. And while he was there, his instructor, his dean, essentially, a man by the name of Luther Gulick, challenged James Naismith to invent a new game that would occupy young men between the basketball and the football seasons. And so James Naismith went to work, and he tried different ideas. Finally, he came up with an idea of throwing a ball into a box that would be mounted at either side of the gymnasium there at the YMCA training school. And he went to the superintendent of the grounds there at the school and said, "I need a couple of boxes." And the superintendent said, "Well, I don't have any boxes, but I got a couple of peach baskets. Would that work?" And so that's how it happened. They mounted these peach baskets on opposite sides of the gymnasium, and Naismith took a soccer ball and instructed the students to try to throw the soccer ball into the peach baskets, and that is how the game of basketball started. And I'm going to go on a little bit farther to talk about James Naismith because he's such an interesting character. As I said, he studied for the Presbyterian ministry.
Huh.
And then after his time in Springfield, Massachusetts, he applied to be both the athletic director and the dean of the chapel at Kansas University. And he was hired for that. But that symbolizes muscular Christianity because it's the Christian faith with the chapel and athleticism with the being the athletic director as well as the basketball coach. And then one final note about Naismith. Naismith is the only basketball coach in the history of Kansas University to have a losing record. So the man who invented basketball has a losing record as a coach of the game that he invented.
Wow. Well, let's start with what's good about all this. Is there something good about sports being the new religion?
Well, it's a form of community, I think, and I think that's very important. I have a friend back in Hanover, New Hampshire, which, as you know, I teach at Dartmouth College.
Yeah.
And Rob says, well, I'm a Patriots fan, and Rob is actually a retired college president, so, he's a man of some stature. And he said, if I'm filling up my car at the gas station and somebody comes up in a pickup truck with a New England Patriots bumper sticker on the back of his truck, we have something to talk about, even though we might be of very different socioeconomic backgrounds, have different political views. Nevertheless, mm-hmm. we have a sense of community because we are fans of the same team. So I think there's a sense in which athletics provides, team sports provide a kind of sense of community. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think anytime you have a sense of community in a culture that is so divided as ours is right now, that's probably not a bad thing.
Yeah.
So I would think that's probably one thing that's not so bad about
yeah.
about sports. And I think reason for the attraction of it, and this is particularly true for white males, I think what sports offers is an alternative universe. That is to say, a world in which there are very clear and delineated boundaries. And if you think about playing fields or basketball courts or even hockey arenas, hockey rinks, most of the angles are right angles, something that's either fair or foul. It's either inbounds or out of bounds. And I think the attraction, again, particularly for white males, is that this is an alternate universe that is utterly fair. Unlike their perception, and I want to emphasize perception, of a world that is not fair, where everyone else seems to be getting an advantage these days, and whether it's admissions quotas or affirmative action in one form or another, all of that is seen, the perception is on the part of white males that the world is unfair, and the world of athletics offers this alternate universe where everything is very clear. It is also the proverbial level playing field where everyone is judged by his or her athletic skills. And it's probably the closest thing we have in our society to a perfect meritocracy, which is to say, at least at the collegiate and the professional levels, if you aren't skilled, if you don't have the talent, you're not going to play. And so it's a meritocracy, again, unlike the perception that the world itself is not meritocratic, I guess that's the word.
That's a new word for me. Is that connected to the root is merit? How good
I
am?
A meritocracy, okay. Right. Yeah.
Well, I can certainly think of even in the black community where sports has brought a lot of people meaning and pulled people out of the ghetto and given them something to achieve and shoot for and men made many of them quite wealthy at the same time.
Absolutely. But then again, you have to deal with the flip side of that, the disappointment of someone who doesn't make it, who expends a great deal of time and energy in that pursuit. And, of course, if you look at the numbers, the chances of becoming a professional player in almost any sport is minuscule. And then you have that disappointment. I don't know if you know the book Friday Night Lights by H.G. Bissinger,
yes.
mm-hmm. which is an extraordinary book. But the whole saga of Booby Miles, this young black athlete, tremendously gifted, who is clearly on his way to the NFL, and then an injury upends his entire life, and he doesn't make it. It's just very sad story, but I'm afraid not all that unusual.
Yeah. Well, what do you think this all means for us as believers? And how should we be thinking about, is it okay? I'm going to spring training in 3 weeks.
Good.
it's my yearly it's one time I get to be totally by myself on a road trip, and I usually get a couple seats, you know, for spring training games right around March. Sure. And it's just a great time for me. I love it, you know. What do you say about things like that?
Well, I mean, first of all, what you're talking about is a pilgrimage. So that's very much a religious act.
Exactly.
And you think about also, I'm going to come back to your question here in a minute here, John, but you think also about the Super Bowl last Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
And you have something that resembles sacred space. Now, that's a new stadium and probably doesn't have quite the same valence or meaning that, say, Lambeau Field in Green Bay or Fenway Park in Boston or Wrigley Field in Chicago has. But nevertheless, it's sacred space. You look at the players running onto the field. It looks like a liturgical procession to me, right, including with all the smoke and fire, which, sometimes you have you have incense that in a liturgical procession. You've got rules, a rule book similar to the Bible, which would be the rule book for the NFL. You've got authority structures, authority figures, referees, and the highest authority, of course, is the commissioner. You've got all of this ritual stuff going on. And football also, I haven't really talked about this yet, but football is a military game. That is, it has to do with the conquest and the defense of territory. Yeah. And it was devised, as we know it, it evolved out of rugby, but it, as we know football today, it was really formulated by the sons, brothers, and nephews of Union Army soldiers after the Civil War. The first intercollegiate football game was played in 1869. So it's a military game, and there's all sorts of military language associated with the game of football. The quarterback is the field general who unleashes long bombs or bullet passes. You've got the trench warfare with the offensive line and the defensive lines, you know, very much similar to how World War One was fought. You've got various very famous plays, Hail Mary passes, the Pittsburgh Steelers Immaculate Reception, you know, all of these things, very much militaristic. And also, if you watch the game, and I tried to watch only the game and not all the silliness leading up to it, but after the national anthem, you had the jets flying over the stadium, right?
Yep.
The militarism permeates the game. Of football. Now, I want to get back to your question. How do we as believers deal with this? First of all, I think I'm not sure there's much we can do to deal with it. That is, it's here.
Yes.
It's passionate. And, you know, especially if you listen to sports radio at any time, you get a sense of the passion that fans bring to organized sports. And that was actually one of the reasons I started writing the book, is that I was fascinated by the passion as I started listening to sports radio in the early 1990s. The fact that these hosts could sustain a conversation for 4 hours over whether or not Joe Torre should have listed the starting pitcher with two outs in the bottom of the sixth inning, you know, things like that. I mean, just, or the Jets should have gone for it on fourth and three at the 42-yard line.
Yeah.
I mean, these are just impassioned discussions over, it's a game, right? It's a game. But again, I think it's important to a lot of people. So it's there. It's part of it. And you see churches trying to adapt to it with Super Bowl Sunday parties and things like that. It is the new religion, I think, in America. And I think Super Bowl Sunday is our holy day in American life. And I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm just describing the situation. I think it's just part of the fabric of American life these days.
Well, it it certainly is. And, you know, I think I'm just thinking in terms of what we can find that's good. And, you know, I have a tendency to find a lot of good things in sports. I appreciate the beauty of it. I mean, I remember we were huge.
Absolutely.
We were huge Joe Montana, Jerry Rice fans, you know, and just
sure.
watching, it was almost like watching a ballet. This is
yes.
the way the athleticism is such a beautiful thing when it, you know, that God has given us the ability to do things like this, you know, that's
right.
there's, I would find actually a sense of praise there, you know, and
yes.
And then there are people who do really good things with their money. You know, philanthropy is pretty on the rise among a lot of the players. And
sure.
I remember just recently when in the, I guess it was the AFC, you know, no, the NFC game with the Lions and the Rams. And you
yes.
had, it was, that was interesting because of the switch of the quarterbacks. And
yes.
Yeah. And yet, you know, and yep. Stafford was really loved and revered in many ways
yep.
In Detroit because they got so involved in the community and
yeah,
to watch some of the things they did, it's pretty amazing. I mean, they would go in and he'd do sports, football clinics, and his wife would lead cheerleaders, you know,
yep.
with the kids and spend
yeah.
their time like that. I just think that mm-hmm. there are things you can point out, in other words.
Yeah.
That are
well,
good.
You're talking about one of my heroes. I'm a big fan of Matthew Stafford and, you know, I admire him as well. I mean, and when he was traded to the Rams, he and Kelly gave another $1 million to the city of Detroit or to some organization
wow.
in Detroit to help kids. I mean, he's really extraordinary guy. I have to tell you also, John, that I've been a fan of the Detroit Lions for 60 years. That's 60 years.
Oh, wow.
Which gives you an idea how old I am. And this year we came close, and I think next
you
year
came
we'll
close.
Probably
get, I was, yeah. I was really actually pulling for you guys. I was hoping that you were going to make it, you know, to the,
yep.
to the Super
yeah.
Bowl. I thought that, think that would have been wonderful, but, Who knows?
Next
you know?
Year.
So I guess we just need to, you know, what would be your advice to us as believers? You just kind of weigh this stuff and not let it get out of hand, perhaps?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And I think that there are lessons to be learned from the history. Now, I haven't really talked about this, but... I get into the history of these sports and
mm-hmm.
and with football in particular, the various attempts to desegregate the game, I think, are very instructive. And I
yeah.
think we can learn from that. And I think sports also sometimes is a harbinger. That is, it anticipates larger changes in the culture. For example, the example that I think is probably the most arresting is Jackie Robinson integrated Major League Baseball on April 15th, 1947. And that was more than a year before Harry Truman desegregated the U.S. Armed Forces. So here's an example of how sports really anticipates some of the changes that are going on in the larger society. And I think,
yeah.
you know, racial relations, at least among teammates, for the most part, really are exemplary. That is to say, you have athletes of color and white athletes getting along together as teammates
yeah.
With remarkably little conflict. Now, I'm sure that's not universally the case, but as I think about it, you know, this is an example of how we can get along together as individuals in a multicultural society.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting, too, your reference to how the rule book, you know, sports has the rule book, and it's either in or it's out, and it's, you know, that in light of a postmodern culture is,
yes.
You know, yep. Which tells us, you know, truth is just up to whatever you want it to be.
Relative, yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. There are illustrations there, are they not? We can say,
yep.
You know, we've got to have some rules or we're not going to be able to live together.
Exactly. No, I think that's right. And, you know, the example I use is that, you know, if I get called for strike three by the umpire, I can't turn back and say, gee, you know, I've had a bad day. You know, I didn't get much sleep last night. Give me another strike, right? You just don't do that in sports. And that's unlike, again, the perception in the larger world that that everything is unfair. And I emphasize it's perception. I think white males have plenty of privilege in this world, and I'm one of them, so I understand that too. But the allure of sports, of team sports, is that this is an alternate universe, that where everything is strictly accounted for, and you don't have ambiguity.
Yeah, yeah. So what's the title of the book again? Passion Plays?
Passion Plays, How Religion Shaped Sports in North America. And
okay.
I focus on baseball, football, basketball, and hockey.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball, by the way, is the quintessential immigrant game because it's the only game where the defense controls the ball. And it's the object of the offensive player to disrupt the defense's control of the ball. He's outnumbered 9-1, just like many immigrants in the 19th century.
Yeah. Wow.
And there are only three islands of safety out in that hostile world, first, second, and third base. And the greatest triumph, of course, is to return home.
Home.
So, so that's great. The immigrant game.
So I would think that reading this book then would help me maybe make some connections with even sports and with truth and with what I believe. Is that true?
I think so.
Yeah?
I think so, yes. Absolutely. And you know, there's some great stories in there, too. There's wonderful stories in the book.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. I have a photograph, for example. One of the things I argue about baseball related to what I just said is that it's a quintessential immigrant game, and immigrants have always and outsiders have always excelled at the game of baseball. So in the 19th century, it would be immigrants from, say, Scandinavia or Germany. More recently, of course, with Jackie Robinson, you have athletes of color playing Major League Baseball. And more recently, as you know, being a baseball fan, it's immigrants from the Caribbean, particularly the Dominican Republic, and also for Asians, you know, Shohei Ohtani as an example of that. And there's I have a photograph in the book of three New York baseball players, one each for the New York Giants, the Brooklyn Dodgers, and the New York Yankees. Jackie Robinson, the black player, of course, for the Dodgers. Jewish player for the Giants, and Joe DiMaggio, Italian, for the Yankees, as an example of how immigrants excel at the game of baseball.
That's great. Wow. Randall, our time is up. I can't believe how fast it goes. But are you familiar with Michael O'Connor's book, Sermon on the Mound? Have you seen that?
I don't think I have, no.
Okay. You've got to get this book. I'll have to see. He's a good friend of mine, and I ran into him at Mount Hermon Conference Center in California.
Sure.
And but let me, I gotta turn you on to this book by reading the first page, the first sentence. I really think this is one of the best first sentences of any book I've ever encountered. He goes, "I believe in two things, God the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, creator of heaven and earth, the beginning and the end, the Alpha and Omega, the one and only source from which all life flows, and baseball. Everything else is just sports and religion.
I love it. I love it. Well, you also know that baseball is God's game, right, John? You understand that?
Right.
Well, because it's the first chapter in the Bible. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth.
In the beginning. Oh, well. Well, Randall, thanks. Thanks for helping us. And I really do think this will help us think. I don't know. I always love Harry Blaymeyer's, who coined the phrase thinking Christianly. And I just think there's a way to think Christianly just about everything. And I think
you
showed us that we can even think Christianly about sports instead of, you know, getting pulled away. We can actually help cement the things that we already believe. Perhaps, would you say?
I believe that.
So do you think I have the blessing of the Episcopalian priest to go to spring training and enjoy my angels?
Oh, absolutely. No, it's a pilgrimage, John, and you need to do that. Absolutely. And you'll encounter sacred space there at spring training. There's no question about that.
Okay. All right, Randall. Thank you. And we'll have you again soon. You just keep turning out these books so fast, I can't keep up with you.
Yeah. Well, it's always fun, John. Thank you.
Okay. All right. God bless.
You too. Thanks.
Well, there you go, folks. That was fun. There's a spiritual way to look at anything, including
John
Fisher
on Blog Talk Radio.
Help you
connecting life.
Help you run out and get out. Get the fast place. And anything else that this man has written, he's a very valuable historian in our culture and very important to our Christian faith. Putting faith with the way we live today. And that's what we like to do on this show. So God bless you. Join us next week for another exciting interview on Blog Talk Radio, The Catch. God bless you.